Create Art Podcast. Commentary. Artistic collaboration.
Hello, friends. This is Timothy Kim O'Brien, your head instigator at Create Art Podcast, where we help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. I use my 20 years of art and education experience and podcasting by using conversations, interviews, commentary, and projects to help you achieve your goals in your artistic practice. Today's episode, we'll talk about artistic collaboration. Now, in my theater days, we talked a lot about theater being a collaborative art because of all the different disciplines that go into making a show. There's lighting, carpentry, costumes, and props, not to mention acting, directing, and lastly, writing. This is true for any show that you see. But what about other art forms? Is there an opportunity to collaborate? Absolutely. In fact, I highly recommend collaboration with not only those who share your artistic practice, but for those from outside your discipline. Now, this episode concerns the benefits of collaboration, and we will talk about that. But I'll also be commenting on some of the articles I discovered while making this episode that deal with collaboration and how the best artists utilize this to enhance their practice and extend their network. In the spirit of today's episode of collaboration, I want to let you know that I am recording at the Central Rappahannock Regional Library's Idea Space. Now, this space has a 3D printer lab and a video audio booth where people from the community can learn how to do things that they may not have access to in their homes or are very cost prohibitive. I know for me as a podcaster, having a recording booth is an expensive proposition, and recording my podcast at a studio can be expensive as well. So when they opened up this space a few months ago, I was one of the first to sign up and be trained in their facility by my good man, Mo. Many libraries have maker labs now, so check your local library system, like I did, and see if they have something similar. It's a great way to network in your community with other artists and creatives, and I'm excited to partner with them to bring you this and future episodes. Now, when I was doing theater academically, there was a ton of lip service paid to collaboration. The faculty would determine the shows we would be doing on the main stage, and we'd be required to do shows in my own master's program to complete our degree program. During my thesis, I tackled this topic and how we as a department failed at collaboration and showed how it broke down at various levels. Also, the problem with collaboration I experienced in college was mainly due to individuals caring about their own shows and not wanting to extend themselves to other students' work. Everyone wanted to make sure they got a good grade or padded their CVs, so when someone brought up a challenging show, like I usually did, most people decided not to lend a hand. Now, I was a lighting designer and carpenter, as well as an actor, director, and writer, so I had a ton of talents, and I was in high demand during school. But I was also and still am intrigued by the avant-garde and new works. Everyone wanted me on their show because they knew they would have someone that would work long hours to get things done correctly. However, when I wanted people to work on my shows, there's crickets. I had and still have a demand for high-level commitment on my projects that I work on. Hence, I find myself working on projects alone. I could easily lower my standards, but why? When I put my name on a project, I want to be known for putting out a quality piece. And yet, I know I can't do everything on my own. And even on a solo project, I notice that there's a need for collaboration in getting that project out to the public, which is the goal of every project I have. I say all that to say this. Collaboration needs to be between individuals who have a common purpose or goal. The best collaborations I've had have been partnerships where we both had skin in the game and are clear on what each person will be responsible for. Each person knows the skill level of the other person, and both people can have frank discussions of outcomes during that project. So, this whole episode is not a sob story about failed collaborations. So let me tell you about a time when collaboration worked out surprisingly well. I was working as a lighting designer as an undergrad on a show for a grad student's thesis. Naturally, the grad student was overly concerned about every aspect of the show because he would be critiqued by faculty. I'd already been known around the theater department as a very competent electrician, but this would be my first time designing a larger show. The same held true for the set designer, who was an up-and-coming designer in her own right. The faculty assigned us to the design team, and the grad student was not necessarily pleased to have two undergrads who had not designed a show of this size working on his thesis project. The set designer and I knew we would be under a ton of pressure from the director, and that this design could either make or break our future prospects of getting another design. We sat through a very disorganized first design meeting with the director, who did not have a clear vision of what set or lights should look like. The ideas he had were very rough, as he had no experience with building sets or hanging lights. His ideas were not feasible with the space that we were assigned to the present show. Luckily, the set designer and I had worked on shows in the Black Box Theater before we knew the particulars of what could be, and more importantly, what could not be done. As a design team, with the costume designer, we met without the director, and we brought his notes of what we felt was important to the play to the meeting and discussed how best to accomplish the visual aspects. We had no control over the acting or directing choices, so we stayed in our lane and deferred those to him. In the meeting, we chose colors and textures and moods for each scene and came to an agreement on how we would present this to the director. At our next design meeting with the director, we all came in with samples of our work. Needless to say, he was flabbergasted. He had no idea of our talents, and at that point, he deferred to us when it came to decisions. We even requested him to attend builds to learn the basics of our chosen crafts. Now, I gotta say, it was funny watching him stumble around with a ladder while I was directing the initial hang and focus, while I was hanging upside down from the lighting grid, hanging and focusing lights. He had similar experiences with the set designer and costumer. During our first tech rehearsal, when we were going from the first act to the second act, in the play, there was a change. The first act was set in present day, whereas the second act was set 20 years earlier, so there needed to be a completely different look and feel. Now, we didn't have a budget, space, or manpower to have two separate sets. However, due to the set designer's choice of paint and texture for the fake bricks and my double hang, it created the feel that the director was looking for, and it was the first time he had seen all of that in action. He stopped the dress rehearsal and pulled the design team out onto the stage, and in front of the actors and crew, he started applauding us for the work we had done. When we presented the show, we normally did a post-mortem. The faculty and other grad students in attendance applauded our design and the transformation that we accomplished just by changing the lights. I stepped forward and talked about the process and how that the choices the design team made complemented each other to accomplish the effect that we knew the director wanted but couldn't verbalize. From that point on, we were known as the Three Musketeers and worked on several shows, both on the main stage and on grad student projects. The secret to our success, we came together, dropped the idea of just doing it for a grade, and created some great work that complemented each other's discipline. This type of collaboration can happen for you. When it happens, it's magical, and it's something that many artists search a lifetime for. Now, I have numerous other experiences to talk about, but I would rather share with you a few articles that discuss the benefits of collaboration. The first article I'd like to talk about is from Creative Block, written by Rosie Hilder, where she talks about 9 pro tips about artistic collaboration. Now, her first point is to find someone who complements your skills. If you're a painter, try working with someone from a different discipline, like maybe a graphic designer, or maybe somebody that works in textiles. They can show you different ways to make your colors pop, or a different way to draw the eye to certain objects in your composition. Use your imagination. My tattoo artist, Ashley Hutchins, collaborated with a painter back when I was in grad school, and they did a black and white photo shoot of me when I had a mohawk. The painter colored over the photos in different hues that enhanced Ashley's photos, and they were featured in an art museum down in Richmond, Virginia, which had a great write-up in the local paper and featured a picture of me. Unfortunately, I don't have that for you in the show notes, but we'll talk to Ashley. We'll see if we can get that for you. Now, Rosie's next point is very appropriate for today's Zoom culture, when she talks about using different time zones to your advantage. Since many of us at the time of this podcast, are still in some form of lockdown, we may be working with someone from across the country or even the world. This allows us to get different perspectives, and since they're probably in a different time zone, use that to your advantage. The work can continue while you're asleep versus two people burning the candle at both ends at the same time. We do need sleep to recharge ourselves, and sometimes we just need a break. By having a time zone difference, it forces us to take that break and get our creative juices flowing. Her third point is to forget competitiveness. If you come together with a mindset that you are enhancing each other, we remove the competitive nature that is embedded in the minds and culture of those in the West. These collaborations should be of equal effort on the part of both people as if you are part of a whole. This can produce some great works that an individual is unable to accomplish. Now, our fourth point is to agree at the concept stage. If you start off knowing who will do what and when, then you both will hold each other accountable, and there's going to be no confusion on who needs to do what or when. Start off with an agreement and move forward. It will save the collaboration, and you'll have a great experience without resentment. The fifth point she brings up is not to be afraid to scrap projects. Now, not all of my collaborations produced a work. Sometimes people don't gel, and that's okay. Maybe you overstated your skill set. Please, for the love of God, just be honest, okay? Or maybe they overstated their skills. Maybe you just don't see eye to eye. Maybe something happens in your life or theirs, and you need to change focus and go in that direction. Big point to remember here, life happens. Know when to scrap the project and work on something else. Let the other person know and try to part ways on good terms, because you never know when you will go back to that person for a future collaboration. In her sixth point, she discusses micromanaging. You can micromanage yourself, but not them. You never know what's going on in their life. Trust their process. Discuss their process and the time it takes, and build that into the project from the start. Remember, we talked about setting goals in the first episode this year? Make sure you do that type of planning with your partner. The seventh point is remembering your goals. It's a good idea to have a visual cue in your workspace, both daily and overall goals. Know where you want to end up while you're on your journey. Now, the journey is the best part of any work. However, at some point, it does need to stop, and you need to present your work to the public. The eighth point mentioned is to not rely on phone calls. You may need to meet face-to-face, and this is also true for emails. Don't rely on them. We can only convey so much over the phone or in a text or email. Sometimes we need that face-to-face meeting of the minds. In-person is great. A Zoom call may be needed for safety or distance. But don't overlook that face-to-face meetings. They will save your project, and you will be better able to gauge how they're doing versus trying to guess how they're doing over a poorly worded email. I know, I speak better with my hands, and I can convey more. That is why I do a monthly live stream. The last point Rosie brings up is sharing the work constantly. Let your partner know where you're at in the process, and show your work. Again, it's not a competition. And maybe if you're stuck at some point, they can provide a suggestion on how to get over a creative block. Two minds work better than one. These are all good points to make the most of your collaboration, and I'd recommend writing them out when you approach somebody to collaborate on a project. Bring them to the first meeting and try your best to adhere to these points. Some will be more important to focus on depending on how you work and what your strong and weak points are. The next article comes from a blog, Society 6, written by Mallory Morrison. She brings us four points to ponder when it comes to artistic collaboration, and some overlap with the previous article. The first point she recommends is asking questions before the collaboration takes place. Some of the questions she recommends are, what do you want from, and what do I get in return? What will the project be used for? What's the turnaround time? And where and how will it be created? These questions are best settled before the work begins. You don't want to find yourself asking them at the last moment because it could change the whole feel or mission of the project you're working on. Don't be shy about this. Be upfront. Know what you bring to the table and know what your partner brings to the table, because you may find this partnership is not a good fit. If you must write these questions down or others that pertain to the project and get them answered first, don't accept that it'll be dealt with later, because when you get started and get busy, these things will not get addressed until it's too late. Her next point is to get it in writing. You may be thinking to yourself, I don't necessarily want a contract. And that's not what she's recommending. I look at it as a roadmap for a trip you want to take. When you write out, there is no confusion as to what is expected from the collaboration. These items can be changed and make sure that both parties initial off on the change. The big thing is, you don't want misunderstandings to cause the breakup of a potentially great artistic collaboration. Nobody wants this. Or, if they do, they're probably a bad fit for you, so don't collaborate with them. If everyone is clear about their expectations, then everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing. Mallory's third point is to do your research. Look at your partner's past projects. Do they complement what you're doing in your practice? Open your mind and preconceptions of art and see if there are things that attract you to this partner. It's like a date. Know as much as you can before you go on this artistic date with another creator. Find out who they've worked with in the past. Ask these people. At worst, you may get another collaborator that best suits your artistic vision and work process. Also realize that some people are out there to trash others. So if you hear a lot of bad news from one or two sources, realize that these sources may not have been a good fit. Also, don't slam your partner in public because it's a bad fit. If someone asks you about a partnership with someone you don't jive with, let them know the person's strengths, because we all have them. And let them know that the partnership didn't work out in objective terms, not subjective terms such as personality conflicts. The last point is realizing that your time is valuable. If your partner is always late on turning in projects and the release date is continually being pushed back, have a frank discussion with them and figure out if that timetable is too aggressive for them. Open those communication channels. Maybe you both need to bring in somebody else to handle simpler tasks that are tripping you up. When pricing your work for sale, you need to include the time it took to create the project. You could be working on something else that has a higher rate of return. Your partner needs to respect your time, and you need to respect their time. Now, many of us create in isolation, and when we get together, we crave that contact with others, and that's fine. But if a design meeting is mainly discussing how your weekend was versus the next steps you both are going to take, you've just wasted a great deal of time. Set up a timer during your meetings and stick with shorter, focused meetings. Put time in the overall schedule for fun time with your collaborator, because we do need that socialization. But remember, folks, time is money. I'd like to end this episode by talking about a collaboration that I've had for the past few years with Kyle Bondo from Gagapod Network. Now, I met Kyle about 4 years ago by attending his meetups here in Fredericksburg. We decided to start a network and a podcast called PodWrecked because we saw new podcasters like ourselves struggling with similar items. And we wanted to share experiences about how we survived our podcast and thrived in the world of podcasting. Now, Kyle had more experience than myself in podcasting, although I'd done it longer. The main issue was that I was doing it wrong for longer, and he'd taken the time to study podcasts that were succeeding. Now, I quickly learned the right way to podcast and network with others, and voila! Here you have this podcast that's evolved into something that I'm proud to present each month with new content that you can use in your artistic journey. Now, as a team, Kyle and I have helped hundreds of podcasters with their podcasts, and we are recognized by some of the big names in the industry. Now, more importantly, we've learned a great deal from each other. Kyle encourages me to create my own website, and that led me down that WordPress dark path. I've given Kyle some great perspective on how to release his inner creative for a project that he has wanted to attempt. but he didn't have the courage to do it. We continue to put out great content from our podcast, and yes, we've had our times when we don't get the content out as much as we liked. But because of the collaboration, we're both better people because we complement each other's strength. Go to podrec.com and listen to what we've done. So collaboration is a personal choice. You can learn a ton about a new discipline, and you can learn a lot about yourself. I brought you points to consider in this episode about what to look out for in collaborations, and I hope your collaborations work out very well because of this episode. Now, if you've enjoyed what we've talked about, let a friend know. Maybe collaborate with them on a project, and both of you can listen to this episode. If you're looking for someone to collaborate with, hey, let me know. I'd be happy to listen to what you have in mind. Email me at timothy@createartpodcast.com. Maybe you have an idea of something you want to hear me talk about in this podcast? Again, shoot me an email and we can collaborate on what you want to hear. I look forward to seeing what you are working on and encouraging your artistic practice. Show notes have all the links to the articles, social media, and of course the website, createartpodcast.com. I hope this episode has helped you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. Now go out there and create art for somebody you love, yourself.